This is KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland.
Now I'm a farmer, and I'm digging, 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 digging. Now I'm a farmer, and I'm digging, 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 digging.
Well, good morning. This is Glenn Andreessen recording the Dirtbag Show live so we can play it in a few days' time. I've got my faithful compatriot, Jim Gilbert, on the other end of the line, way out in, well, near liberal.
Well, actually, Glenn, I'm in Astoria right now with the wonders of technology. Yeah.
My goodness.
Looking out at a beautiful view of the Columbia River and ships, and it's a really nice sunny day here.
It was a nice sunny day here, too. So we're lucky in that respect, and very little wind right at the moment, but it has been windy. And, of course, we owe a big debt of gratitude. They don't say that. We owe a big debt, and we have much gratitude for our sound engineer, Joe Wilson of Bergman Productions, who makes this all happen. We also have some, I guess it's exciting news, that we are going to be starting a new podcast, a Dirtbag podcast. It won't replace the radio show on KBOO. Rather, it will supplement it. We'll talk about some of the same things, but we'll also talk about other things in more depth in some cases and wherever else it takes us. But we'll have a lot of freedom to do exactly what's on our mind. So that will be starting in the next week. It'll be available sooner than that. And you'll be able to find it wherever you find essentially wherever you find your podcast, but on Apple Podcast or Google Podcast, and searching for the Dirtbag Podcast will take you directly there. So having said that, we've got a full show as we usually do. We will be talking about some new tools that I have acquired, and I'm just tickled pink about how well they have worked. And Jim's going to talk about some of his favorite tools, or at least favorite pruning tools in the meantime. We are going to follow up on some information on what we started talking about last month, particularly the herbicide that is persistent even through in compost. The compost doesn't break it down, and so it affects plants, clopyrrolid. And Jim's had experience with that, and so have I. Plus, Jim will be giving us information on how to make quince syrup, and he'll give us an update on where his is. We're also still harvesting things. It's been a pretty amazing mild year so far. I have never, until this year, harvested tomatoes from the vine for Thanksgiving dinner. And harvested about a dozen or so cherry tomatoes and made a wonderful addition to our green salad.
Hey, Glenn, I should mention that you obviously live in a warmer location than we do. We're out there in this little frost pocket between Liberal and Needy, between all, otherwise known as between Malal and Canby. And we've been down to into the 20s, mid-20s already this year.
Well, it could be that we're in the, you know, nice little climate zone here, but I tend to think it's because I lead a charmed life.
But you never know. Speak outdoor heaters on, right?
It could be it could be the weather. And then we'll talk about a topic that I think is underappreciated, and that's the care and feeding of soil during colder months. And we'll get to that when we get to that. Plus, we do have some sad news, just confirming essentially the end of the Home Orchard Society, and we'll talk about that. And, of course, our Dirtbag Dictionary term this this month the pH and what that means, and also what's annoying me. And I'll try not to forget that this time. And we'll start with our plant of the month, which is rootstocks. And it's going to be more important now than ever as to find to where you can get them. Before, we'd always just say, well, get them at the Home Orchard Society's All About Fruit show. And or I guess it'd be the Scion Exchange in the spring. Yeah.
Propagation Fair was the latest name for that.
That's it.
Yeah.
But it's all moot now, unfortunately. So rootstock, Jim. We've talked about this before, but it's a great topic and very important when you're building your own fruit trees.
Well, and it's pretty timely as now bare root fruit trees are going to become available soon, and people will be making choices. And when I started doing this business, I was aware that a lot of trees were sold with names like dwarf and semi-dwarf, but that was all there was. And what did that mean exactly? And discovered that there were lots of different choices within those names, and could be called a semi-dwarf that would be 12 feet tall or 20 feet tall. And so when we were operating the retail nursery, we made sure that we told people what the size of what the rootstock was, so you could know what size tree you're going to have. So I'm speaking largely about apples, because apples have probably the largest variety of rootstocks that you can get. For example, an old tried and true rootstock for apple is M26, which we call a dwarf rootstock, meaning that if you grew an apple on an M26 rootstock, you would probably get an 8 to 12 foot tall tree at maturity, depending upon the vigor of the tree. If you get another rootstock we have used commonly is M7, and typically call that a semi-dwarf rootstock. And that would likely make a tree somewhere between 12 and 16 feet tall. In some places, you want that taller tree, especially if you're out in the country. You might have some deer issues or something where you want to have a tree that's taller. It has a more vigorous root system. And that's another big issue in rootstock is the vigor of the rootstock itself and how good a root system it is. If the more dwarfing, typically the less able the tree is to stand alone. And if it's like M26 is kind of right on the edge, in a windy location, you may need to have a stake or something to hold it up. If you grow it in a mild area, it's probably fine that way. If you get down into smaller rootstocks like M27 or some other ones, M9, you pretty much have to have a stake to hold it up, even though the tree is smaller, and that's really convenient for harvesting and pruning and care. But generally speaking, it's important to know the rootstocks, and those numbers do affect what the tree will do. And I would, if I were purchasing a bare root fruit tree, especially an apple, I would ask the company that I was buying it from, what rootstock is it on? And don't trust the names dwarf and semi-dwarf with those. Then, of course, there are rootstocks for other trees too, which, you know, for pears, peaches, plums, all those and in those cases, generally speaking, that there's not so much variety and ability to get a really, really super dwarfing tree.
It's always been my contention that, you know, the smallest trees for city gardens are what's most appropriate, not any type of semi-dwarf, because, you know, 12 to 16 feet would just dominate your garden, and they're, you know, creating shade and whatnot. So to me, it's worth the extra staking that would need to be done for the truly dwarfing rootstocks. But realize too that apple is really the only fruit that has a severe, if you will, dwarfing capability. All the other trees, even if you use the most dwarfing rootstock available, are going to be pretty large, particularly pears. They're just a vigorous, genus is, or I don't know what it would be. But in my experience, you know, a pear and an apple with the truly dwarfing rootstock planted at the same time, the pear will just be twice as big. The diameter of the tree is big, and they just grow a lot more every year too. I have some apples that they're easy to prune. They've been growing for 20 years and they hardly get, I just take off whatever few little shoots come off the top and they're 6 to 7 feet tall. And it sure makes it easy to prune and pick and to bag the apples.
Yes. Yeah, and one thing to keep in mind that you can also, if you want a variety really badly and it's only available on, say, M7, I would not rule it out, because you can also prune it back and keep it smaller with pruning. As compared to, like, for example, in the old days, a lot of apples, for example, were grown on seedling rootstock. We had one in the back of our nursery for a long time, and it was a Gravenstein. And you can imagine how it was like 40 feet tall. But seedling rootstock is not used anymore. I mean, that's just that was the old way of doing it. And the dwarfing rootstocks were so much easier to take care of. And I say M7, there's other, like M111, that's even more vigorous than M7. And that would probably, I'd probably really try to avoid that if I was just planting a tree in my yard, because it's just going to get to be a really big tree. Also, the columnar apples, typically are not, they're not as vigorous and don't get as big. So they're more likely to be grown on a more vigorous rootstock, but it's not such an issue because they grow about half the rate that a regular apple tree does. I also should mention that we're doing a fair amount of research right now on columnar pears, and hopefully that will result in a more dwarfing pear tree, which would be nice.
Yeah. Well, we're tossing out these numbers on what the rootstocks are, but if you're just new to this field here of grafting and rootstocks, you know, they don't mean anything to you. And so either we should post a list of rootstocks or at least say where, you know, you can go online and find lists of rootstocks. And that would be a good thing to have on your phone when you go to buy a fruit tree. So if you see that, you know, this apple tree or what has an interstem of an M11, 111, and, you know, on an M26, and it can be pretty confusing, all right. But at least you will know, you will have some information to ask at the store, you know, what am I getting? It's actually been a long time issue of mine of when organizations will say give away fruit trees because the tags have been lost, or, well, it's a pear, but that's all they can tell you. And generally they're on semi-dwarf rootstock, at least what they consider semi-dwarf. There's no legal definition as to what dwarf and semi-dwarf means. And you just end up with a huge pear tree, for example, you know, if it's a Bartlett or whatever. And, you know, those Bartletts, you know, they're dropping fruit bombs and from way up there, and it can just be a problem. And it's somewhat akin to, you know, planting bamboo and, you know, well, you're not going to live there forever. And then you leave behind this toxic mess.
This, Glenn, this might be something we could put on our new website for the podcast. Just have a brief list of different rootstocks, and so those numbers at least make some sense to people,
right? And there are a lot of rootstocks, but very few are available. And we know that you can get some rootstocks at One Green World and possibly others.
Yeah, actually, we did a little research just before the show, and One Green World, Raintree Nursery, and Burnt Ridge Nursery all Northwest companies, all three of them sell rootstock.
And it's typically rootstock would not be found at just a typical garden store.
Not likely, because it's you know, it's for people who are really, if you have a rootstock, then you also have to graft it, which is a skill that not everybody has. So
that's why the home orchard side is demise is going to be such a loss.
Yes, absolutely.
All right. Okay, well, hopefully that'll make some sense, and just realize that almost all fruit trees that you buy will have been grafted on to rootstock of some type.
Yeah,
figs are the exception, the most notable exception, I think, that they're not grafted.
Yeah, there are, of course, a lot of berries that are grown from cuttings and so forth that aren't grafted as well. But
fruit trees are
grafted, or we actually they're budded, which is another subject we could talk about propagation. But the same basic principle.
But I don't know what the generic term is there. I'm just trying to think. You know, if it's not grafting, I guess it's a bud graft or other types of grafts. So.
Yeah.
Here we are talking semantics, though.
That's right.
So that's a little spiel on our plant of the month, which is rootstocks. And typically, you wouldn't be grafting now. Generally, that's a little bit later, January, February, and even into March in some cases.
We could certainly mention that one very important part of that process is collecting the scion wood, the cuttings that you're going to use for grafting, which is still, you know, I imagine maybe in Portland, your trees still haven't lost leaves. Out in our area, everything's gone pretty dormant. But, another month from now, during January is a really good time to collect scion wood when it's fully dormant. And then you can just, you want to do is take wood that's the vigorous growing wood up, oftentimes more toward the top of a tree that you're going to use for grafting. But want to be sure to do it when it's dormant and not too late in the spring.
Yeah. Yeah. They've lost most of their leaves by now. I mean, the fig is done. Apples pretty much done. I'm looking at them now and they're dormant.
Yeah.
Right. So. Okay, well, let's have our first music break here. And all of our tunes today have to do with our new podcast. Yeah, isn't that amazing here? Dirt Bag Podcast. And let's see, the first one is from Guitar Shorty. And the song is called Too Late, which means, we're not starting anything, but... it's too late. We've already made the decision. We're doing the podcast. So we'll take a break and listen to Guitar Shorty. Business here after some Guitar Shorty. Too late. We are also doing a podcast, but this will be a good, dealing with all things kind of edible gardening. Well, to that end, in the last couple of weeks, I have splurged in some cases here, two new tools, kind of, I wouldn't call them high end, but more than I normally spend for a tool. And the first one that I got was a battery operated chainsaw. And I've had chainsaws all my life, till I use them till they die. And in fact, my last one, which was an electric smaller chainsaw that I inherited or that my father gave me. That's a question that I've always wondered, you know, can you inherit something from your father when they downsize? But my dad's still alive even. He's 90. He doesn't have a use for a chainsaw. In fact, while we're on this little subject, I talked to him a couple of days ago, and he is voluntarily going to stop driving when their insurance expires in about 9 days. So they only put 500 miles on the car last year. So they don't use it too much. But anyway, the chainsaw that I inherited with quotes around it, if you have a better term for it, you could say he gave it to me, but he just wanted to get rid of it. It died, started smoking. And so I replaced it with a battery that doesn't require a cord, of course. And it's a short, small blade, 12 inches. And of course, in chainsaws, I don't know, that mean 10 inches of usable blade. But the blade also is very short, it's narrow, but it's not, it's only about 2 inches deep, if you will. And that makes pruning trees remarkably easy. And I pruned my fig tree, and I have to do this annually. It was probably more than 20 feet tall, the tallest ones. And so I was easily able to get into the crooks and nannies of the tree, crooks and crannies, not crooks and nannies of the tree. And and with the narrow blade, and of course, very sharp because it was brand new, it just went through it like butter. Mm-hmm. Now, what also made my job a lot easier is that this is where I splurged and got an orchard ladder, but not just any orchard ladder. This is a brand that I had never heard of until last summer when a neighbor of a place where I have some of my bees lives. My bees swarmed and landed in a tree on his property. And so he loaned me his orchard ladder to get it. And it's a Hasegawa ladder. Jim, are you familiar with that brand at all?
I'm not.
No, Japanese. And they have two styles, but the one that I got actually has a platform built in at the top, about three rungs down from the top, where you can actually kind of step in. It kind of cradles your body if you lean against those upper rungs, and it's very secure. A pretty wide base on the orchard ladder. And orchard ladders, maybe just for description, are three-legged ladders. The two where the rungs are, and then just one that gives it, you know, a three-point solid footing. And and it's easy in an orchard because you don't have to figure out how you're going to get that third or the third and fourth legs down in a regular type ladder. So that's why they're called orchard ladders.
Probably. Much more stable on uneven ground.
Yeah. And this one has an adjustable third leg and plus some rubber footings for the ladder legs if you're inside. But that also made my pruning job a lot easier, and it will make harvesting figs a lot easier too next year. Mm-hmm. So it's just, you know, the right tool for the job makes all the difference. And this stage in my life, and probably yours too, both Jim and Joe, you know, I focus on, well, what makes it easier for me? Yeah. Now, before we go on, I think this might be an appropriate time to speak about Jim. And today being a special day for Jim. It's his birthday.
That's right.
We're not going to be playing any music for him,
right? Well, but thanks, Glenn.
And remember that we're recording this several days before that the actual show date is. So you could call him up anyway and wish him a happy birthday, and he'd understand that. So right. Anyway, those are my two tools that I've acquired recently, and pleased.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting. I was thinking about tools before the show, and Over many years, you know, I've learned about pruners, for example, hand pruners. When I first started the nursery, the ones that everybody thought were the very best were Felco pruners, and they are very good pruners. And you probably have a pair yourself, Glenn.
I've got two.
Got two pair.
I inherited one from my grandmother.
Nice. Yeah, they are really good quality, very good steel, do a really good job. However, after some significant amount of use, I started moving on to a different kind, because I found one of the things I didn't like about the Felco was that the handles are coated with a red rubber, sort of rubber type material. And after a long bit of use, that will come off. And then you end up with a metal handled pruner, and it's not so comfortable. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing I don't like about the Felco is the little latch that holds the pruner closed. It will get loose and be hard to use, and it just isn't as comfortable. So the pruners that I ended up using, and I've had for probably 10 years now and very happy with, are made by a company called Bahco. BAHCO, and they have a composite handle, so there's no coating on it. It can come off.
Oh yeah.
And the actual latch, the thumb latch that holds the pruners closed, is much more secure and doesn't get loose and works great. And also very good quality metal and stuff. And I went online just to see, you know, what was available, and they actually have a store for that company. And then there's other places you can buy them online, and they're not inexpensive. I mean, the good ones are like $50, but I would think any listener who's going to be doing pruning for these would last for your entire life. I mean, there's nothing that would wear out on them. They talk about doing thousands of cuts a day if you're into that kind of production level of pruning. Hopefully, I don't do that many anymore, but but they're a nice tool.
Well, I do have a pear tree that I purchased the property next door, and it came with a combination pear tree, a Bartlett and an Anjou, and I've kept it in very good shape all these years. I mean, I've been pruning it for 25 years, but I'm sure I make more than 1,000 cuts on that tree alone. I mean, it just sends up that many shoots that I need to make to keep it smaller. But yeah. I don't do them all in one day.
Right.
And yeah. I have blisters.
But as I'm sure you know, I mean, having a good pair of pruners is a really nice tool, and there are a lot of inexpensive ones out there, and it's like what you get, what you pay for.
They're probably good, and as long as they're sharp,
right?
But you know, after that, I should mention on my Felco pruners, I've made this move maybe 5 years ago, is that I just took off the darn latch because it was. Frequently when I'm out there pruning or whatnot, it would lock up when I didn't want it to.
Right.
And that is very frustrating to have to stop and get rid of it. So.
Well, next time we get to meet in person, I'll bring my Bahcos and you can take a look at them and see what you think.
Where are they made?
I think they're made in France.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, while we have a little bit of time here, let's follow up on our talk last month on the herbicide that were you having problems with it, Jim? I can't remember how it came up, the topic of the herbicide that doesn't break down in compost.
Yeah, I don't, you know, we were getting some, we have a neighbor that has horses, and they were feeding their horses straw, and we didn't really have a problem directly, but we found out about a potential problem, which made us very concerned that the straw that they were using was coming from grass seed fields near us, and the herbicide that they were using in those fields, which is called Stinger, had this kind of distressing ability to survive for more than a year, maybe a couple of years, and would even go through the horse's gut and come out in the manure and still be able to inhibit the growth of plants. That was pretty scary.
Yeah. Clopyralid, C-L-O-P-Y-R-A-L-I-D. Clopyralid is the active ingredient in the stinger. And I think I mentioned last month or whenever, you know, through the years I've talked about this, that I had a, I myself had a problem because I composted my neighbor's lawn clippings that I cut, but she had a commercial lawn care company treat it or just take, treat the lawn, fertilize it, whatever. And apparently they were using something that had clopyralid in it. And I didn't know that at the time. Composted the grass clippings and used it in my potting soil. And the, particularly my tomatoes, when I seeded them, they would germinate, but then they would get an inch or so tall and they would just droop over. And I thought, well, maybe it was cold that, that caused this, you know, in my greenhouse or whatever. So I started over again and the same thing happened. And then I started investigating more and, you know, the, in Washington was having a big problem with it. I remember this was probably 15 years ago, Spokane, their municipal compost, they had to junk tons of compost because they were selling it and people were reporting these same damages. So now clopyralid is not banned, but it, it, overall, but it is banned for home use. Fortunately, but like Jim said, it can go through the guts of cattle and horses and won't compost and it won't break down. And even when it gets into hot composting conditions, because I ran mine through hot compost and it, it was still potent, if you will.
It's kind of distressing, isn't it? I mean, you know, like how, yeah, how do you, you think about these organic materials should all be good for compost and putting, and then you hear, so you have this chemical that, you know, is going to not good. It hurts things.
Well, and I heard some reports just this last summer of soil that was purchased that, that was bad. Anyway,
well, yeah, don't use stinger. I mean, don't.
Or anything that has this clopyralid in it, right? Really. So, okay, Jim, and you also talked about your quince syrup. That is just such a sweet thing for such a. You're not a sour guy. Sweet thing for a sweet guy.
Yeah, thank you,
That's
Glenn.
Almost toxic.
That's right. So this is really a fun thing. Many people may grow Japanese flowering. Now, well, first I should mention that quince, the word quince is a common name for a couple of different fruits. There's the typical big yellow fruit quince, which is you can get right now in stores. And I think it's just a really neat fruit. It's very fragrant and wonderful to work with and makes make quince crisp out of and stuff. And then another plant, which is related but not directly, is we call Japanese flowering quince. And it's a shrub, not a tree. Has a smaller fruit. The fruit is sort of hard. It's compared to the yellow, the large yellow quince, it's not as tender. And one thing about the Japanese flowering quince, though, it also is a really nice fragrant plant. I mean, it's a really nice plant for the landscape. And what we learned about in overseas is that where they grow this plant in some quantities, they can make a syrup out of it. You can't really make like a crisp out of that particular fruit because it's just too hard and just doesn't cook that way. But what we did is we had a lot of fruit this year. We cut the fruit into pieces, small pieces. We mixed the fruit and with granulated sugar, half and half by weight. So if it was a pound of fruit, we had a pound of sugar. We put that into a gallon jar, mixed it up, put it in a gallon jar, filled the jar, and then we put it in the refrigerator.
Filled it with water?
Nope, fill it with just fruit and sugar.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yep. Put it in the refrigerator. And through a magic process, which is really kind of blows me away how this worked, is that the sugar pulls the juice out of this pretty firm fruit. And over a period of time, in our case, we leave it for a month in the refrigerator. The juice pulls, I mean, the sugar pulls the juice out of the pieces of fruit, and it becomes liquid, and it makes this just wonderful syrup that's like really, really tasty. And you can take like a teaspoon of that syrup in a glass, add carbonated mineral water, and it's a really very delicious like Italian soda. Really,
what
really
color,
good.
What color is the syrup?
Pretty clear. Maybe a slight bit of yellow to it, but it's pretty darn clear. And what also is interesting, as a result of doing this, these slices of fruit become dry, like almost hard, dry, fibrous, no juice whatsoever left in them. It just takes the juice out. And even though they're in a liquid, they're dry.
Hmm. I have to try that.
Yeah.
Because one of my neighbors has couple of bushes and he hasn't done much with them.
Oh, if he has fruit, yes, Glenn, do it.
So you can do that because he had some pretty small ones that I don't know that they'd be even very good to open up and eat raw. I tasted some of the bigger ones because this was shortly after our last meeting where you brought some in.
Mm-hmm.
And so I knew what they were and how to eat them. But could you make syrup out of the smaller ones too? You think
any piece of that fruit should work?
Yeah,
And also, we tried it with regular quince, and we made a syrup, but it doesn't have the same flavor. It doesn't as strong. It doesn't. It's okay, but it's more sweet. The Japanese flowering quince has more tartness, and then makes this a much more flavorful syrup. And the fruit, there's still good fruit out there. It doesn't spoil very fast. It doesn't. So your neighbor may still have some fruit.
Yeah. I'll go take a look. I've been going to his house somewhat regularly every couple of weeks and picking Fuji apples. He's got a tree that's still just loaded, and the squirrels are getting, and birds, I guess, probably more are getting some, but. Okay, thanks, Jim. Quince syrup.
Yeah. I should also mention, Glenn, just I might have mentioned this before, but a year ago, September, we found ourselves in Korea at a magnolia vine festival. And anybody who's growing might by any chance have magnolia vines. Schizandra chinensis is the Latin name. The Korean name is Omija. It's it grows wild in the Pacific, in the Russian Far East, and Korea and northern China. They have a festival in Korea, and what they were doing at that festival was they were selling jugs of the Schizandra fruit, the magnolia vine berries, mixed with sugar. And they were doing exactly the same thing, making this syrup. And if you eat those berries straight, they're very tart and very strong flavored, and I don't really find them appealing to eat. But boy, that syrup just knocked my socks off. It was just absolutely delicious. And you know, we don't have enough fruit berries at our place to make syrup this year, but we're going to start growing more of them because it was just outrageously good.
And it may
work with other tart
very tasty
fruits too. You know, anything that has
all right.
A, has
I think
a
it's time for
acid.
Another.
Do it.
Time for another tune here of announcing our new Dirtbag podcast. And oh yes, we've got Fiona Boys, a guitar picker out of Ireland, I believe, or. I think it is Ireland. Fiona Boyce, yeah. And this is called Waiting for Some Good News. And we'll be bringing it to you on the Dirtbag Podcast.
I'm waiting for some good news. Well, I'm worn out waiting for some good news. Well, I'm waiting for my lucky break for all that money I'm going to make. I'm just waiting for some. I'm waiting for some news. Well,
and the machines lay thick on the ground. You see things you might not see out in the leafy parts of town where they're making policy. I'm waiting for some good news. Please, Lord, send me some good news. I'm checking my mail 3 times a day for some that'll drive my blues away.
Well, that's a taste of Fiona Boy's Waiting for Some Good News. That's from her CD, Blues Woman, from 2009. Some rather tasty stuff on there. I like her songwriting as well. Well, a reminder that we will be, that a podcast, a Dirtbag podcast, is also, we're starting that up. That's the idea of these tunes, the tunes that I've chosen for this month. And so that's just a reminder that you can find that, or information about it, I guess, on the our new website, dirtbagpodcast.com. And from that, you can either listen to it right there if you'd like, or find out how to get it from Apple Podcast or Google Podcast or wherever else. It's will be found many places, we hope. In the meantime, we are still harvesting from the garden. I don't know, Jim, you're still harvesting some of those flowering quince. What's the term I should be using now for that again?
The for the fruit itself, Japanese flowering quince, you mean?
Yeah. Is that what we're calling it? What was the new name for something? Or the name that we want to talk about?
I think that's it, Glenn. I mean, Japanese flowering.
I keep thinking of Adami, but that's not it.
Oh, I was talking about Shizandra.
Oh, Fajoli.
Shizandra vine.
Well, no, Fajoli. What about Fajoli? Is that... that's ridiculous when I don't write things down. Maybe it was the plant of the month last month or something, in that
I mentioned the word
is what we're really going to call it.
I mentioned the word omija. That was the name for magnolia vine, the Korean name for magnolia vine.
Yeah, but I'm talking about last month. See, I can't even remember it anyway. So anyway, I'll get off of this and we'll move on. But you're still harvesting something. We're still harvesting. Beets are still in the ground. Carrots are still in the ground. We're eating squash. Boy, I had a yummy squash. Mm-hmm. I'm going to have to put in my recommendation for a winter squash called Dakota. Dakota. We'll talk more about that when we talk about seeds starting in a few months' time. But cooked up one of those. Of course, potatoes and onions are still in storage, and we're eating from those. And I harvested some the oblong type persimmons. Is that Fuya, or do I have that mixed up?
If it's are they ones you can eat when they're still firm, or are they ones that have to be soft?
Soft.
Yeah. So
they're the elongated. Not flattened, but elongated.
Right. The large acorn-shaped one, the common one that's sold is called Hachia. I don't like that so well. At least where we live, it doesn't really get to be sweet like it does the ones from California are. And so we have one called Saijo, S-A-I-J-O. It's also elongated, not as fat as the Hachia. It ripens much, much better for us. And also one called Nikita's Gift, which I brought back many years ago from Crimea, from the Nikita Botanic Garden in Crimea. It's a really beautiful, smaller fruit than the Hachia, but it almost turns red. I mean, it turns a very red color when it's ripe and really delicious. I just ate one yesterday. And
excellent. Well, this is the first time this neighbor, a couple of houses up on the street, had put a sign out saying, you know, help yourself to quince and also to the persimmon, but it hasn't ripened yet. So I'll have to come back and report to that there.
Yeah. Just send me a photo, Glenn, a quick little photo, and I can tell you right away what it is.
Yeah. It's a pretty good size.
Yeah. Sounds like Hachia.
No, I don't have it here with me.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah.
Okay. So what are you doing on the farm, Jim? We're running out of time here a little bit, but.
Yeah.
You're in Astoria, so you're not doing a whole lot of
today. I'm not doing anything on the farm, but we've been, day before yesterday, we dug all of our bare root trees in one day. It was really remarkable.
That was
a really big deal, and I got them all out of the ground, and we'll start grading them. And that's, to like apples, pears, peaches, plums, even a whole bunch of new apricot varieties that we're testing. That was a big thing to do that. We've also been finishing up evaluating persimmons and feijoa or pineapple guava varieties.
That's what I was talking about, the feijoa. Pineapple guava. Yeah. Okay.
Good. Let me figure that one out.
Yeah.
No, it's been really, interestingly, on a business level, there's a lot of people home gardening because of the virus, and so demand for plants is pretty high, and we're doing a lot of shipping this time of year, which is not so common to be doing that. But there's I guess the silver lining to staying home is that you get a chance to work in your yard and plant things.
Uh-huh. Well, speaking of working in your yard and planting things, I'll just spend a minute or so on this care and feeding of winter soil. I've always taken issue with books in particular that will say, this is a good time, if your garden is put to rest, or, we're just going to, I don't know what they're thinking, that garden needs, or the soil needs to recover, or I don't know exactly. I've never really asked somebody when they say that. But in my experience, it's been, I'm always reminded of a comment that I read, and I've mentioned this before on the air, but of course, when you've been doing gardening radio for 20 plus years, you can't help but repeat something. But I'm reminded of the former maestro, conductor of the Oregon Symphony, James DePriest, who had a bad kidney, and an anonymous donor. I think they didn't know each other beforehand, but somebody donated a kidney to him, and during all of this, and it was very successful, although the maestro has since passed away. But in all of this news coverage, there was a quote from him that was something to the effect that a busy kidney is a happy kidney. And, so the more water you run through your kidney or whatever, that's good for it. And I'm of the same somewhat position for soil, the organisms in the soil, that they don't need to rest or whatever. As what we want them is to be active as much as possible. So whatever we can do to facilitate that will help our gardening in the long run. And so practically what that means is your best bet is to have something growing in the soil, because that stimulates the microorganisms that are in the soil. And when those plants die, they provide organic matter, which the soil organisms need to live. And they eat this material. So before you plant a cover crop, put some compost down, and then you'll have the best of both worlds. So that's the chemical part of it, if you will. But there's also the physical part, in that we don't want too much water in the soil, and we don't want the soil to become compacted. So if you can't plant anything, then cover it with something. Even if it's plastic, that's not my first choice. My first choice would be leaves, for example. So that would prevent the water from compacting the soil and squeezing out all the air space that's in the soil. And kind of related, water would also do the same thing. It wouldn't squeeze the air space out, but it would fill it up. And the end result is somewhat similar. You just don't have the pore space, the P-O-R-E. And this is an example of what we can get into more heavily on our podcast. We can bring in experts and talk however long we want or however long we think you would want to listen to it and go from there. So basic bottom line here is no, work your soil. You know, let those microorganisms eat and divide and die. That's just what they do. And by having that all that activity going on now will certainly help your planting in the spring. Okay, Jim, can you give us a few words about Hector Black? He's a longtime companion, or not companion, but associate or friend of yours who passed away recently.
Yeah, you know, sadly, as time goes on, people that we love and care about leave us. And Hector, I met Hector in 1990 at a NAFEX, North American Fruit Explorers, get together in Davis, California. And one of the things that happened at that meeting was four people came from the former Soviet Union, four horticulturalists came, and that was really remarkable, and we spent a lot of time with them. Then Hector and I, and we were invited as sort of a return favor, six Americans, Hector, I, and four others, to go to the Soviet Union in 1991. That was a remarkable journey, which took us to several different regions. And with Joe's help, we're working on a documentary of that trip, because one of the men on the trip took a lot of video during that time. But Hector was sort of the leader of this, and of course, really enjoyed traveling with him. And he has started a nursery some years before in Tennessee called Hidden Springs Nursery, growing a lot of native plants and berries and different things. And anyway, over the years, I've stayed in touch with Hector and talked with him about different things. I actually went there. We had a little reunion of there were five of us surviving at the time, and we had a reunion a few years ago at his place. Anyway, Hector, I found out in just a few days ago that in August, Hector passed away, 95 years old. His story is remarkable. He would be called back in the day a peacenik. He was before me and others who protested the Vietnam War and stuff. He was out fighting for civil rights and advocating for peace and doing remarkable things. He also came out as a gay man when he was 75 years old, and has at least one daughter who's running his nursery and was married and all that. But just a really an amazing person, an amazing story. And I would, anybody who would like to check out Hector, we'll put on the podcast, on our website, a link to a memorial cert that was broadcast for him on NPR. But you can just do a search on Hector Black and come up with a lot of things about his life and about him.
Okay, I'll look forward to that. I'm not familiar with him at all, so thanks for sharing that.
Sure.
Okay, well, we don't have much time left here to talk about our Dirtbag Dictionary, talking about soil pH and why it matters, and we'll get into this more maybe on the podcast sometime, but pH is, as you probably are well aware, a measurement of either the acidity, it's the acidity of your soil. And why it matters is because at different levels, the nutrients are tied up. They're just not available chemically to your plants. And that's why it matters. And one thing I'm very fond of saying is that one of the big benefits of compost is that by using it in your soil, is that it buffers, so to speak, that pH, and your plants can access the nutrients that are there regardless, unless it's an extreme measure of what your pH is. So it matters, but we'll have to go from or carry on later. And maybe I think we'll just cut off our music just a little bit shorter at the end of the show so I can tell you what's been annoying me. It's not really just an annoyance this time, more of an observation, but it still kind of annoys me when people talk about little, meaning younger. When they talk about, you know, when I was little, or, you know, my little sister, well, a little sister might be a little bit different than that, but when I was little, or when my sister was little, what do you mean? You mean when she was 2 feet tall, little? Or, you know, so I guess I'm wondering, well, when did little start meaning young or younger?
Yeah, it would sound funny though. Say my younger sister, that would work too, huh?
Yeah, or just young. When my sister was, I guess I'm at a loss for words here, but you know, when I would say when my sister was younger, that's what's wrong with that, or young. But little means, I think it means, you know, in these people's, whoever would use it in their minds, is that it means, well, when she's between 2 and 5 or something, maybe. Old Joe, he's commenting here. Okay, well, anyway, that's our show for today. And it will be broadcast, hopefully, on Wednesday. Its initial broadcast will be on Wednesday, December 9th. And just a reminder that the radio show will also will appear as a podcast, but we'll be recording separate podcasts called the Dirtbag Podcast at various lengths. And we're going to start that this week. So thanks for listening. Thanks to both Jim over there in Astoria and Joe Bergman Productions, who has been running our sound recording.
And happy appreciate that, Joe. And happy holidays to both you guys. And hope that everything
We'll
get to January 20th and the sun will shine again.
Okay, we're going to end and go out with music from Willie T. This is from a great little collection CD of called Blues Piano Music. Willie T. is called In the Beginning, and that's about our podcast. So thanks for listening. Be well.